I just want to tell you that, unfortunately, in the past year, one of our members, Mrs. Sheva Honig, passed away. And she was a Holocaust survivor. And her and her husband came to Montreal. They were benefactors of Beth Zion. I know from Sheva that her husband and Rabbi Shoham were very good friends, because she spoke about that a lot with me. And when she passed away, her grandchildren and great-grandchildren wanted to do something in her memory, and because she loved the learning, they decided to endow the Beis Medrash for Women program. So now it's Sheva Honig Beis Medrash for Women, and so we have to have a karas hatov to the Honig family for that. And so this morning we have, as our speaker, Rabbi Yeshua Grunstein from Efrat, Israel, and he's spoken all weekend for us, and today he's going to speak about women, opportunities, evolution, and revolution in 2017, so I'm sure it's going to be very fascinating, and without further ado, Rabbi Grunstein, please.
Okay, a good morning, everyone. Shavuot Tov, a good week. Yes, if you can, please. I'll just leave one for myself. Thank you. Thanks. Okay, I don't argue with ladies so easily, so where do you want me? And that's where I'll be, over there.
Where you are is okay.
Where I am is okay. Okay, so we'll start here, and if needed, we'll move up. Sounds good. If my wife ever heard the word, I don't argue with women, she'd probably crack up laughing, but it's another story. I thank Razi very much for her words of introduction, and I'm very happy to be here this morning at this Beit Midrash for Women, because we're going to talk about a lot of things that are happening in the world of Orthodoxy and how it pertains to women, specifically, this morning. And this is happening around the world. It's not just happening in North America, even though sometimes you may get the impression that North America is the Jewish world. It's happening around the world, and I think that it's absolutely already a consensus that women should be learning Torah. The only difference of opinion is how much of Torah should they be learning. But everyone agrees today, almost across the board, that women should be learning Torah, from the Belzer Hasidim all the way to the most lightest Orthodox Jew you can find, learning Torah, and therefore it's really a privilege to be teaching Torah to you this morning here in the Beit Midrash for Women. I understand from Razi's words this is the kickoff for the year, and I think that it's really a privilege to kick off the year. I just hope that by the end of the morning you'll still talk to me, simply because the topic we're going to speak about this morning is a topic that is controversial. It is one that is still being debated in the Jewish world. It's unfortunately bringing up a lot of bad feeling, I would say negative feeling from people, as opposed to debating nicely between two human beings. Unfortunately, the debates get very vocal. However, around this table, just for this particular lecture, it would be great if you don't see it as a lecture. I know I'm standing here and this is a lectern and I'm supposed to be lecturing. But what I'd like to do is learn together with you. So any comments you have, please comment, because I believe that by the end of the day, you're not going to come out with a clear answer, but you will see how various rabbis and Jewish leaders think about this issue. And as you leave the doors of this particular session, I'm sure you'll be able to choose where do you feel most comfortable of all the opinions that I'm going to try to present. So please, in a word, if you have a question, question. If you have a comment, comment. We're all amongst friends here. As you can see, I'm the only man in the room, so nothing leaves this room. I won't tell your husbands, if, not that you care, but quite frankly, please comment anywhere. If you look at the top of the source sheet, you'll see that this particular year, 2017, the OU came out with a document, and if you look on the top of the source sheet, the headline says, OU bars women from serving as clergy in its synagogues. A response to a handful of women with ritual or prayer leadership roles, rules forbidding formal religious guidance positions or delivering sermons during services. So on the 3rd of February of 2017, the OU, the Orthodox Union, of which I believe Beth Zion is a member, as well as many, many, many other synagogues around North America, came out and said, if you have a woman on the clergy staff of the synagogue, you cannot be a member of the OU. Now, since then, till November 2017, I don't know of one OU synagogue that has a woman on their staff that's been written off as of yet. Could be changing in a week. Don't know. But right now, that's the situation. Now, in order to understand this little small headline, let's try to see where we were, where we are, and ultimately see what the issues are. So we're going to try to go back in history just to the beginning of the 20th century. We're not going back further than that. We're going to talk about what's happening today in the year 2017 and also understand where this document came from. So if you look in the second source on your source sheet, you'll see that there is a woman named Rabbi Lila Cadogan, and history...
Kashdan,
thank you. A history-making title in Open Judaism. And in this particular article from 2016, it talks about the fact that this woman, who is functioning as a clergy in an Orthodox synagogue, ultimately grew up in an Orthodox Jewish family in Montreal, of all places. Her father, who passed away two years ago... Okay, you better tell this article, it says that.
The parents are from Montreal, I know.
Yeah, but no, she's from Ottawa, because I knew her from Ottawa.
Her father's from Montreal, but her parents are from Montreal.
Oh, maybe her parents are from Montreal. She grew up in Ottawa.
She lives in Montreal.
She used to go to
Chicago. Sorry, that's a very good accent.
So, when I prepared this source sheet, I actually thought that maybe some of you would know her because she comes from Montreal. And ultimately, I can pick other examples, but I picked this one simply because she originates from here. And she says what I believe is a very natural development of where she was. Listen to what she says. Her father, who passed away 2 years ago, was her greatest teacher, studying Jewish texts with her on most nights and urging her to follow her dream. In other words, this is a woman that grew up in an Orthodox home. Her father taught her Torah. As I said today, it's pretty much in the consensus. And ultimately, what would be the natural flow from that if you chose? So if you learn biology in high school and you go on to university and you love biology, perhaps you will become either a biologist or a doctor. Natural. And if you learn Torah in high school and you love it and you want to excel in it, then you'll go on to your year in Israel and your 2 years in Israel, and if your parents don't get a heart attack, you're 3 years in Israel, and eventually, perhaps you'll become a Torah scholar, and, as in this case, she became a rabbi. Now, that would be a natural flow if I would flip it around to anyone who happens to be of the male species. In other words, you learn Torah when you're in high school. You're not just going to put it on a low flame, but you put it on a high flame later on, and you eventually become a rabbi. And ultimately, if you look at the mission statement beyond, under it, the place that she's rabbining is called Mount Freedom Jewish Center, says it's a diverse, vibrant, and family-friendly, open Orthodox synagogue that provides religious, cultural, social, and educational experiences, etc. So ultimately, in New Jersey, this native of Montreal, who I believe, and have no reason not to believe, is totally Shomer Shabbos, keeps every last law in the book and off the books, is someone that's functioning as a rabbi. So this is happening today. So in order to appreciate what's happening today, let's go back a step, and then we'll see what the comments were.
Just clarification. Yes. When you say Torah, you mean only Hamishah Torah? Or you mean Mishnah, Talmud?
Good question.
It's a general name.
Good question. Actually, on the conversion courts, when we say, what's Torah, that's the trick question. Okay. Torah, when I say Torah, means the biblical Torah and the oral Torah. Okay, God gave both to Moses. It was oral for many years till it was written down. And ultimately, today, we basically, when we say Torah, we mean both of them. Okay, so let's just appreciate where we are, going back to the beginning of the 20th century. If you look at this next source on the page where it says the 20th century, The Mishpatei Uziel had the following question. Who is the Mishpatei Uziel? His mother did not call him Laws of Uziel. Come home for dinner. Laws of Uziel! Please, clean your room. The Laws of Uziel, his real name was Rav Uziel. He basically was the first Sephardic chief rabbi of the land of Israel before it became the state of Israel. He rabbinated together with Rav Kook, just to put him into context. And he basically had the following question brought to him. Now listen to the question of the beginning of the 20th century. Look on your source sheet and see what rocked the boat, rocked the entire land of Israel, as he said, Umipanea hizda'aza'a Eretz Yisrael kula. What was the big question? This was like the feminist revolution of the beginning of the 20th century in Palestine. Can women vote? Do women have a right to vote? Of course. Very good point, Razi says. The Jewish world is not disconnected from the non-Jewish world. I made this point on Shabbos morning when I spoke, saying that ultimately we are gerim and toshavim. We're residents and we're visitors. So if something's happening out there, you can't say, no, it doesn't influence the synagogue. It stops at the threshold of the synagogue, and in here we're like 200 years ago. It was happening around the world. What was the name of the lady that smoked in public and was taken to jail? Sims something? Forgot her name. So, women are asking for a right to vote. If you didn't know that from the history books, you know it from Mary Poppins. Women are looking for the right to vote, and ultimately, it comes into the Jewish world. It comes into the rabbinic world. And says Rabbi Uziel, I'm rabbinating in Israel, I'm the chief rabbi, Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel. This is something that's rocking the entire land of Israel. He goes on to say in leaflets and warnings, brochures and articles published in newspapers, frequently prohibit the participation of women in elections altogether. And they relied on the words of the Torah law and those maintaining a moral fence and modesty. Now, if I would take this line, take out the word elections, and put in women rabbis, women prayer groups, women teaching in front of men, I probably could write the same line about what's happening today in 2017. So just to appreciate that, A, this has always been happening, yeah. And B, this is something that when it happens to the Orthodox community, there's always a counter-reaction because we know what we had, but we don't know what we're going to get. You see, from something that today is, how can I say, natural. Men and women go out on election day and vote in Israel. Today, then, it was not natural. Today, it's considered par for the course. You do it. Then, it was a big deal. There were leaflets for, leaflets against, everyone name-calling each other, and all bringing sources for what they said. Don't think anyone came out and said, women should vote because I'm a feminist. They said, women should vote because based on Torah law, A, B, C, and D. And there was another leaflet that came out, women cannot vote. Rav Kook was against giving women the right to vote. And he said, this is because of A, B, C, and D, quoting from our holy sources. So, here we are in 2017, women vote. That's already a given. But we're talking about something totally different today, and that is, can women be rabbis? Can women be educators? Can women teach men? And whatnot. Questions I heard, yes?
So how did Golda Meir become prime minister?
So, when Golda Meir became prime minister, indeed, there was the reaction and the counter-reaction. She became prime minister because Israel's a democracy, and they elected her as prime minister. First, she switched Levi Eshkol, who died suddenly of a heart attack. And then in 1969, she was actually duly elected. She was elected by the popular vote. Actually, the Labor Party got the most votes then in that election than I think ever in history. So Golda Meir was elected. So like Golda Meir didn't ask for rabbis to agree to it. So that's how she was elected. Now, your question is a little different. How did the rabbis go ahead and respond? We'll get to that in a few moments. Can a woman be a leader of the Jewish people, be it a prime minister or a rabbi or something in between? Yes. Correct. A woman cannot be an aide in a beis din. That's a law. We're going to get to that in a few moments. A woman cannot be a witness in a beis din for anything that has to do with ritual law, such as being a witness at a wedding under a chuppah. That's ritual law. Can a woman be a witness for civil law? At least in the state of Israel today, the answer is yes. A woman can come in and say, I saw Joe Schmo smashing the car of Shlomil, And I saw it with my two eyes, and a Jewish court, a Beis Din, would actually take that testimony and accept it. Okay? But we'll get to that in a moment, because that's very important for a different question. Could a woman be a judge on a Beis Din? So we'll get to that. Now, this is what's happening today. Women are functioning as rabbis, like the woman on the top of the page whose name I'm about to mispronounce. Barbara, what's her name again? I'm sorry.
Kashdan.
Rabbi Kashdan is a rabbi woman in a functioning Orthodox synagogue in New Jersey. So what's the reaction of the Jewish world today? We basically have today, I would say, four different reactions. The first reaction is Agudas Yisrael. Agudas Yisrael, whoever doesn't know, is what we usually call the right wing of Orthodoxy. If you want to picture it vividly, they usually wear black hats. They usually have better beards than my own. Some of them even have hair on top of their heads, unlike me. And they basically said that if you go ahead and give ordination to women, you're not Orthodox. To quote, they went ahead and they said that or open Orthodoxy, namely the school of thought that gives ordination to women, is no less than heresy. In Hebrew, apikorsis. Okay? He warned of the danger of the ultra-Orthodox posed by open Orthodoxy. Parallel said that open Orthodoxy is steeped in apikorsis or heresy. There is a grave danger out there, etc. That's reaction number one. If you give ordination to women, you're not Orthodox. Call yourself whatever you wish. You can have a mechitza in your synagogue. You're not Orthodox. That's reaction number one. Reaction number two, if you turn the page, is the reaction of what I would call the representers of modern Orthodoxy, at least in the rabbinic world, and that's what's called the RCA. Anyone know what it stands for? Rabbinical Council of America. Again, I throw out the question why Canadian rabbis feel an obligation to be part of it, but the answer I know, because it is a very big organization, and it's supposed to represent the modern Orthodox voice. Now, you can judge today if the voices coming out of there are modern, are a little right-wing, a little left-wing, but the RCA came out and said, very simply, A, open Orthodoxy is not heresy. That much we're not going to go. They're part of the big Orthodox tent. But B, the Rabbinical Council of America formally adopted a policy prohibiting the ordination or hiring of women rabbis. They ultimately said you cannot call a woman a rabbi. We encourage women to learn Torah, said the RCA. We're modern Orthodox. As per our mission statement, quote-unquote, women can learn Torah, but they cannot be rabbis. And therefore, if you got smicha from the same institution that gives smicha to women, you cannot be a member of the RCA by virtue of that smicha, by virtue of that ordination. That's number two. So number one is heresy, you're not Orthodox if you ordain women. And number two is, you're Orthodox, you can't be part of our organization. We're to the right of that. Yes, Jackie. The rabbis and not the shuls. The OU is an organization that brings shuls together. The RCA brings rabbis together. So the RCA basically said, if you want to be a member of our club, then you cannot be part of that club. Okay? So picture the Flintstones. Everybody remember the Flintstones? You remember how Barney and Fred put on their strimals and went to the lodge? Right? They put on the strimals with the little things. So you can't be part of our lodge if you come from Yeshivat Chovevei Torah, which gives ordination to men, because their sister institute is Yeshivat Maharat, which gives ordination to women. So, the Aguda says heresy, you're out of the camp. RCA doesn't say you're out of the camp, you can't be part of our lodge. So you can put on the strimal and call it, come to the door, we're not letting you in. Okay. Third response to ordination of women came from the organization that is part of the organization that I'm part of. I run an institute to train rabbis and educators and send them around the world. We're part of Or Torah Stone Institutions that has, as one of their institutes, a place where they give sort of ordination to women, but not exactly ordination to women. What do they give them? So we're all asking that question in the office. So what is it? If it's not a rabbi or is a rabbi, they don't call her a rabbi. What do they call her? You can look at the article from the Jerusalem Post, number 3. They basically call her a manhiga ruchanit, namely a spiritual leader. They take all the tests for ordination. Three rabbis test them, just like a rabbi is tested. They learn all the material, but Rabbi Riskin, who's the head of Or Torah Stone Institutions, together with Rabbi Stav, who's the co-chancellor of the Or Torah Stone Institutions, refused to call him rabbi for the following reason. He basically said that if you call them rabbi, the implication is that the woman can do everything the rabbi does, including, and we're going to go from the easiest to the hardest, counseling, we don't have a problem with that. Probably women are better at that. Halachic instruction, no problem. They can give halachic, psak halacha, that's fine. Leaning, we got a more of a problem there. But there is a leniency on the books. Leading services. Rabbi Riskin and Rabbi Stav was concerned about one thing. Since we place rabbis and educators around the world, it's not just in Montreal, it's in small communities, right? These little dwarfs around the world, these little shtetls that don't know any better. So if they hear an Orthodox institution are ordaining women, they'll say, this will be great. We'll take a woman rabbi for our Orthodox synagogue. They don't know any better. We don't know any better. And just like in small communities, the rabbi is the preacher. He's the teacher. He's the counselor. He does funerals. Let's go on. Mohel, not always. He lanes. He davens. Laning and davening, they don't believe that a woman can do, because a woman is a volunteer to lane, and a man is obligated. One who volunteers can't fulfill the obligation for one who's obligated. And ultimately, they basically say, like Chovevei Torah, we are giving ordination to women. We want them to be part of the clerical staff of the synagogue. Albeit, don't call them rabbi, call them spiritual leader. And make sure that you put in the safety guards that they do not lead services. They do not lane, but they can give a speech. And they can go ahead and counsel, funerals, maybe weddings. I haven't seen it, but I'm assuming there's no problem with that. And indeed, Rabbi Golden, who was then the president of the RCA, he's now retiring from his shul in Englewood. Rabbi Golden said, yes, Rabbi Riskin and his institution is not part of our prohibition in the RCA because they don't call them rabbi. They call them spiritual leader. Now look what happens with one little phrase. You don't call them rabbi, you call them spiritual leader, you can be part of the RCA. You call them rabbi or rabbah, you can't. Interesting. The shul can be an Orthodox shul because the members consider it an Orthodox shul. It has nothing to do with the RCA. The RCA means you're part of a rabbinic organization.
The rabbi is part of the RCA.
Right. Yes.
It's like a division.
Okay, so I'll explain.
There's a rabbi,
this is what's going to happen.
In Rabbi
Adam Shire's. See, it took me all Shabbos. I got it. It took me all Shabbos. And it's Shire Shamayim.
One gate.
One gate. I went over this 5 times last night. I just repeated it. Yeah, hey, listen to myself. I talk to myself. Whoever would see me would probably institutionalize me. So Rabbi Shire Shul now has a maharat on staff. Yeah. So let's explain the ramification. He can't be a member of the RCA because he is a graduate of Chovevei Torah, unless he has another smicha. That's in terms of Rabbi Shire as a person. He wants to be a member of the rabbinic organization. You can be a good Jew without being a member of any rabbinic organization, and a good rabbi for that matter. Fine. Two, can this shul be a member of the OU?
Yes.
At this point, not.
No.
But they weren't thrown out yet, because they were. So what do you do with a shul that is and has a clergy who's a woman on your staff of clergy? Maybe the grandfather then, we're waiting to see. Rabbi Riskin would say, don't call her rabbi, call her spiritual leader. And that's basically where they would come down. Now, maharat does not say rabbi. It's manhiga. Ruchanit, hilchatit, toranit. Excuse me, manhiga, hilchatit, ruchanit, toranit. I wish they would call me that. That's such a beautiful name. Much nicer than rabbi.
Can I ask them about the rabbis? Like, say from Chavare. So, it's also retroactively if you are...
The question is, if indeed you were a member of the RCA and this happened, are you thrown out? The answer is, you know, you're not thrown out. I don't believe. I don't believe you're thrown out of the OU, as we say, to date. But this might happen. It's looming. It's now brewing. It's like a coffee machine that's brewing, and any moment we're going to see what happens. Are they going to lower the flame and just be quiet, or are they going to make the flame higher? I can tell you, though, not retroactive, but proactive. If you go ahead and hire a woman, you're making a new synagogue, the OU will not take you under their wing, according to their piece of paper. Rabbi Riskin would say, why not? Just don't call her a rabbi. Now, just to finish the picture, then I'll take your questions. A number on the next page, you'll see the Rabbi Avi Weiss, who founded Yeshivat Chobevei Torah and Yeshivat Maharat, basically said, in a nice way, I don't care. I really don't care. So you don't let us into the RCA, we'll make a new rabbinic organization called the IRF, International Rabbinic... I forgot what the F stands for. No, IRA, International Rabbinic Alliance. So... we made a new organization. You'll want us in the RCA? We'll have our own organization. To make it very, very simple, why do I need to be a member of the RCA? I can do whatever I want. So we'll take all the rabbis that have women clergy or want women clergy. We'll bring them together. We'll make a new rabbinic organization. And just like any rabbinic organization, we'll fundraise. We'll have conventions. We'll come to our rabbis' installations. And fine. You know, I don't really care that Aguda calls me a heretic. And I don't care that the RCA tells me my students can't be part of their organization, and I don't really care that Rabbi Riskin plays around with the name. I'm going to call her rabbi, I'm going to call her whatever I want, and I'll make my own rabbinic organization, and we're all part of the big Orthodox world, and that's the way it is. So, basically, where we are today is as follows. Women can vote. However, can a woman be a clergy, could be a rabbi? We see that there's four different opinions out there. Agudas Yisrael says it's heresy. The RCA says, in a nice way, no. Rabbi Riskin says yes, but don't call her rabbi. And Rabbi Avi Weiss, Rabbi Asher Lopatin, and everyone from Chobevei Torah says, call her rabbi, call whatever you want. You can call her rabbah, you can call her maharat. But basically, we have no issue with it. You're making an issue out of nothing. That's where we are today. Yes, questions?
Didn't Rabbi Weiss say that, like, didn't he switch when the RCA made the ban? Didn't he switch it?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to call them the name.
So here's where I personally don't know where things stand today. It's a little amorphic. When he basically called the first woman rabbi Rabbah, and there was such a counter-reaction, he sort of went back and said, okay, from now on we won't call her Rabbah, we're going back to the old name, Manhigah Hilchatit Ruchanit Toranit. However, no one fell for it. And therefore they're still not allowed into the RCA. The men are not allowed into the RCA. So I'm not so sure where that stands today. I've heard both. Yes, Razi.
My husband says that a lot of it, forget Agudas Yisrael, a lot of it has to do with Yeshiva University. Yeshiva University has their own placement, rabbinical placement, and also for teachers for schools. But Chobevei HaTorah is filling the gaps in North America, whether it's shul or school, and it's blocking out Yeshiva University's graduates from these places, and maybe this is the reason why RCA, which has always been linked to the OU and Yeshiva University, is having such an effect, because there's a group of men, women, whatever, who are losing jobs because of Chobevei HaTorah, and it's not so much of the issue with Maharat, Rabbah, or Rabbi, it's more of an issue of money, because if you have a Yeshiva University boy or girl or couple going out to a community, whether a shul or a school, when Yeshiva University goes out to fundraise, people, you know, if they like the couple or the boy or the girl, they will give generously. But if they have no one in that community and Chobevei HaTorah is there, who's going to get the funding? Chobevei HaTorah and not Yeshiva University. And my husband says it's pretty much a financial issue more than a name issue.
I hear. Could very well be. At the end of the day, it does come down to the following question. In any yeshiva, can you place your rabbis or can't you? I run an institution that trains rabbis and trains teachers. If I can't place them, I'm a failure. So it does come down to that at the end of the day. Namely, we can sit here and talk about the women rabbis, good for the Jews, bad for the Jews. The rabbis are saying yes or no and this and heresy. At the end of the day, who's going to decide? The communities. If they accept women rabbis, like they accepted women voting, that's what's going to be. And I'm about to show why that's a legitimate opinion within Jewish law. However, if they don't, they don't. It's going to come down to that. As to how it's playing out today, I have to say, there are communities that opt for Dafka, a Chovevei Torah graduate, because they have a lot of money behind them, they can pay part of the salary, or they just like a Chovevei Torah person. Really depends on the community. There are those that like the YU graduates. There are those that go to Israel and ask me for rabbis. I'm not so sure yet if we can make a sociological study how the communities come down on this issue.
They're finding it in North America in little shuts that they're picking Chovevei over.
Could be.
Yeshiva University. Could be. For schools, Torah and Torah.
So far, though, I could just say one thing. I don't know how Chovevei Torah stands on placement and YU. My institute, Strauss Amiel, actually stands in a situation where we have more positions than people. So Baruch Hashem, we're okay, and I hope that continues. However, you never know. At the end of the day, that's where it's going to be decided, not these four points of view. Yes, Barbara?
I just wonder if you could clarify if there's any difference in the curriculum between Rav Riskin's teaching of women spiritual leaders and Avi Weiss's Maharat in terms of ADM and services and laning and some of the issues that you brought up, that could be problematic. Like, are these women taught that that's an issue, or are they taught the same curriculum as...
I'm not at Chovevei Torah or Maharat. I do know what's happening in Rabbi Riskin's institute. They are taught that women have certain limitations within ritual of Jewish law. I'm pretty sure that Rabbi Avi Weiss's yeshivas are teaching that. Rumor on the street has it that sometimes the places that are liberal tend to go to the liberal way, sort of beshita. Namely, they're going to go that way whether we like it or not. So if there's three opinions, as we see, they won't say, okay, let's think which opinion is the most truthful. But rather, no, we're going to go to the lenient one because we want women to be more involved, and that's the way it is. I don't know Maharat, and I don't like to talk about places that I've never been to. They never invited me to come speak. I am assuming that just because it's an Orthodox institution, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. They're taught what the limitations are within Jewish law. Do they, however, take the elastic waist of halacha and stretch it? That's a question I think you have to judge by each individual woman rabbi or maharat or whichever she's called, and ask her, do you stretch it a little too much? I can give many examples of stretching Jewish law, such as giving the maftir to a non-Jew, father Jewish, mother not, because he's a bar mitzvah boy and he's part of your shul, that's stretching the elastic waist of halacha pretty far, maybe necessary. However, in these issues, you'll really have to ask them. In Rabbi Riskin's institute, I know very well what they're taught, and I can tell you that they're taught these limitations together with the opportunities that we're about to go into. Sometimes, by the way, not to my taste. My taste might be different, but I cannot say it's illegitimate halachically if they're taught that women can do A, B, or C, as long as it's based on the sources. Yes?
Where does halachically the concept of svarah fit in, and is this ever...
We'll get to it. We'll get to svarah in a moment. We'll get to it in a moment. Okay? We just spoke about what's happening on the ground. We didn't get into the actual sources. We're going into that now, and you'll see that there's no consensus on this issue. Yes?
We're talking about women and laning.
Yes.
That because they are not obligated, they cannot lane?
If a woman's not obligated, the Gemara says that she could get an aliyah. However, she shouldn't because of the honor of the congregation. Mipnei kvod ha-tzibur. That's a Gemara in Tractate Megillah, page 23a. The question is that a good idea? The Gemara is just saying she shouldn't? Or is that a halacha? That's the Gemara's way of saying don't. The Code of Jewish Law, as well as the Rambam, say don't. There is a school of thought out there, led by Rabbi Dr. Daniel Sperber, who knows more Torah in one pinky than I'll ever know. The man wrote endless volumes on Jewish law, a whole volume on this issue, in which he maintains, no, the Gemara is giving a suggestion that if the congregation is offended by it, that a woman comes into the men's section and lanes, then no. But if they're not offended, then it's fine. It's just a suggestion of the Gemara.
So
the partnership minyan is based on the second point of view.
Rabbi Sperber.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I'll try to repeat every question that I'm asked and then give the answer. Now, I'm glad I have a big mouth. You weren't complaining about me speaking, so that's good. I was always told I had a big mouth. Now I know why. Okay. Let's see, after hearing all what's happening on the world out there, let's go back into the sources and see what do the books say. And if you look at what it says, introduction, three special women, you can see that there are three special women that I'm presenting here because I wanted to say something that I said on Shabbos and I want to repeat now. And that is that when it comes to outlook, hashkafa, how do you view the state of Israel? How do you view the place of women within Jewish community? There isn't a consensus within our sages as to how to view it. And I'm giving you three examples now. I could have subdivided it more, but because it's a Sunday morning, I was nice to you. Only three. Look on the right side of the, on the left side of the page. Masechet Brachot, Daf Yud Zayin, Amud Aleph. Greater is the promise made by God to the women than to the men. For it says, rise up, you women that are at ease and hear my voice. So women are greater than men. Why are women greater than men? According to the Gemara in Brachot, page Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, who wants to read on and tell me? Take 10 seconds. Why do women get a greater reward than men? Making sure who goes to synagogue?
Their children
go to synagogue or Jewish school to learn. Next. Their husbands go to the Beit Midrash, the study hall, to learn. And they wait for their husbands to return at night. So what's a good woman according to the Gemara? One who takes care of her husband learning Torah, her children learning Torah. What about her? She's busy being the traffic cop. Sending them out, bringing them in, waiting till they come home. She's not learning. She's not making a living. What is she doing? She's staying home and making sure that they go out. So that's the Gemara in Masechet Brachot, model number one. A wonderful woman, higher level than men, is one that is a wonderful, housewife. Now, I want to be clear. Housewife in the eyes of our sages is a great thing. As a matter of fact, one of the sages of the Talmud called his wife Bayit, namely house, because she said, she is the bedrock of the house. I come into the house and I leave. I give a little Dvar Torah at the Shabbos table. I don't help. I don't clear, I don't serve, I don't wash dishes. My wife is the house, my pride is my wife. Very nice, but housewife. Model number two, yes.
It doesn't say that she shouldn't be learning, it's just modeling her competence.
Correct.
And her great marriage.
There's no prohibition here for a woman learning. Absolutely.
We're just saying that her merit is that she's taking care of her husband, her children. And
that caveat is very, very important, and that is that it does not say she can't learn. It just says her main job is to send her male children and her husband out to learn. Model number two is Rav Soloveitchik. No one can say that Rav Soloveitchik was a radical religionist. He was, I would say, the father of modern Orthodoxy in the 20th century. He died in 1993. And Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik gave a beautiful eulogy for the Rebbetzin of Talner, who was his in-law, mainly, let me remember this, his daughter, Atara, married the Talner Rebbe's son, Rabbi Professor Isidore Twersky, also Zichron Levracha in the better world. He was a Harvard professor from Monday to Friday, on Shabbos, a Rebbe. Beautiful fusion, another story. Anyway, his mother died, and Rav Soloveitchik gave a eulogy. And in this eulogy, and you can read it, it's one of the most beautiful eulogies I've ever seen. He basically says, there's two traditions in Judaism, a father's tradition and a mother's tradition. What's the father's tradition? The discipline of action, says Rav Soloveitchik. Father's tradition is an intellectual, moral one. A father tells a kid on Shabbos, you can't make a cup of tea like you do during the week. There's another protocol to follow. On Shabbos, you can't warm up water that's cold. But on Shabbos, you can warm up a dry piece of schnitzel that's already cooked. That's what a father teaches. So, says Rav Soloveitchik, what kind of Torah does the mother pass on? Most of all I learned from my mother is that Judaism expressed itself not only in formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. She taught me that there is a flavor, a scent, and a warmth to the mitzvot. I learned from her the most important thing in life. Now this line, when I read it, I get emotional. Imagine, the man that ordained more rabbis in history than almost any other, the man that was at the beacon of Yeshiva University, the man that endless hundreds of rabbis called my Rebbe, says the most important thing in life is what? Not the chidushim, the novel articles I wrote, not the classes I gave, but rather to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of His hand resting upon my frail shoulders. In a word, what does Rav Soloveitchik say? A father's job is to tell you how to act. A mother's job is to tell you how to feel. A father, brain. A mother, heart. What I spoke about yesterday at Chalashuddas, how the mitzvot should influence you, according to Rav Soloveitchik, the influence part is in the hands of the mother, not the father. When you see a mother lighting Shabbos candles, that experience of looking at her for those 2 minutes is not an experience of discipline of action, but discipline of thought and feeling. So basically, according to Rav Soloveitchik, a woman's job is not just to send out the men to school and the kids to school and the men to the Beit Medrash and whatnot. A woman's job is to give the emotional part of Judaism, not the intellectual, but the emotional. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to take a ramification to this, you'd say, what would Rav Soloveitchik say about a woman staying on the staff of the synagogue and giving classes on the emotional aspect of Judaism? According to the Gemara in Brachot, she shouldn't be leaving the house. According to Rav Soloveitchik, well, we have to think about it. We have to think about it. What would he say in 2017 about a woman not telling you how to make a cup of tea on Shabbos, but what the experience of Shabbos means to her, teaching both men and women equally? Because he said, I am Rabbi Soloveitchik because I had a father and a mother. Father taught me discipline of action, influenced my mind. My mother, my heart. I have a heart and a mind. I owe my mind to my father, heart to my mother. That's the second model. Okay? Yes.
It can be a little bit the opposite of Mishlei. Shema b'ni musar avicha ve'al titosh torat imecha.
Could very well be.
According to Mishlei, is with the mother.
Could very well be. Could very well be. So just to finish up the picture, there's a third model. The first model is a housewife. The second model is influencing your heart. And the third model is our famous Devora. Anytime you want to look like you know this particular issue, and you don't know it, but you want to look like you're in it, just say the word Devora. That's a code word of, oh, you're into it. We got it. Okay? It's like certain things, and I took ordination exams. I said, what happens if they ask this question? I said, that's a hard question, but whatever you do, make sure to mention the word Rashba. That, like everyone talks about the Rashba on this, mention it. Like he's the key word over here. So when you talk about women rabbis, women clergy, if you say the word Devora, excuse me for the saying, the ignorant can pass for the wise. You know what you're talking about. Devora. Eshet Neviyah, Eshet Lapitot, he shoftat Yisrael. Devora was a woman prophetess, and she judged Israel. Prophet and judge. Indeed, every Friday night, it's customary to sing or say Eshet Chayil. If you read Eshet Chayil, which is a chapter from the book of Mishlei, a book of Proverbs, how is the woman presented there? Look on the right side of the page.
Superwoman.
Listen to what she does. First of all, she brings food from afar. Namely, she's a breadwinner. Next, she contemplates the field and purchases it. She buys and sells. More than that, she spreads out her hands to the poor man. She gives tzedakah. She has so much money. She sells it. She buys. She sells. She's out. She opens her mouth with wisdom. She supervises the ways of her household. The woman is a superwoman. She can do anything. And it's interesting that Jewish custom decided Friday night, we come home from shul, we say hello to the angels, and we don't sing, oh, you're such a wonderful woman, you stayed home all week, you made a good kosher meal, we're about to eat it. We don't say, thank you for lighting candles, we learned a lot about our heart. What do we sing? Eshet Chayil. Interesting. Jewish custom somehow developed, this is what a woman is, a superwoman. She can do everything. She can, what we can call in common language, she can multitask. Also work for a living, also be a mother, also be a wife, and also be sick at the same time, and do it all. You take a man, he gets a little cold, he's in bed, he can't daven, he can't learn, he can't go to work, kids can't bother him, he's a kvetch for 3 days, but a woman, Multitasking, beautiful. So three models of women. One stays home, is a housewife. The second one influences the heart and not the mind. And the third, she can do anything. Now, since we mentioned Devorah, as I said earlier, that's the main issue. Devorah, it says, was a prophetess. That's in the hands of God. I don't know how prophecy works. But from our perspective, what else was she?
A judge.
She was a judge. Can a woman be a judge? Look in the bottom of the page. The Gemara in Masechet Yehudah, Daf Mem Tet Amud Bet, says, and this is said in a few times in the Talmud, in the Oral Torah, Kol HaKasher Ladun, Kasher LaHaid, V'chol SheKasher LaHaid, Ve'ino Kasher Ladun. Whoever can be a witness can be a judge. Whoever cannot be a witness cannot be a judge. So Tosfos says, according to that, a woman can't be a witness. We said that earlier. So how did Devorah become a judge? She can't be a witness. Imagine, you come into the court, all rise, the Honorable Mrs. whatever, presiding. And she comes in, and she calls the witnesses. She herself can't be a witness, but she can be a judge, according to the simple way we read the psukim in Shoftim. So how can she be a judge? If you turn the page, there's three answers. And today, the three answers are exactly the three points of view out there. The first answer is on the right side of the page. And that is the answer that I personally love, my personal taste, and that is as follows. En raya di shakshira ladun. It doesn't mean that she was a judge, but rather, shem alo ita dana, elaita melamedet lahem adinim. Our problem is that when we read biblical Hebrew, we read it in modern Hebrew. So when it says words like sha'ah, what do we say? What sha'ah? Time, because in Hebrew, Masha, what time is it? You know what Shah means in biblical Hebrew?
Yeah.
Turn. Turn. We read it a few weeks ago, right? God turned to Hevel's sacrifice. Ve'el Kain ve'el Minchato lo Shah. God did not turn to Kain's sacrifice. So in biblical Hebrew, says Tosfot, the word shofetet or shofta or judge doesn't mean judge. That's modern Hebrew. It means she taught Torah. She taught them halacha. She taught them how to keep Shabbos and kashrut and family purity and which blessing to say before and after the meal and what the holidays are of the year and how big a sukkah is supposed to be and what's considered a kosher sukkah and what's considered real kosher for Pesach and what items can you buy that don't need a hechsher. That's what she did, said Tosfot. And indeed, a rabbi, I'm not sure, but definitely someone that teaches Jewish law. Says the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch, anybody know who the author is? We don't know to this day. He wrote a book of what he believed were the 613 commandments. We have a miracle in the Jewish people. Nobody disagrees that there's 613 commandments. There's no machloket on that. We have differences of opinion on everything that moves and everything that doesn't move. And everything under the table and above the table. But on that issue, there's no machloket. 613 biblical commandments. Now that's the end of the good part. The bad part is, what are the 613? So the Rambam has his suggestion.
Yeah.
And the Bahag, the Baal HaLachot Gzolot has his suggestion. And the Smag has his suggestion. The Sefer HaChinuch has his suggestion. He wrote his book based on the Parshas of the week. So he starts from Bereshit. What mitzvah do we have in Bereshit? Do you remember? Fruitful and multiple. Noach talks about the seven Noachite commandments. Amongst them, Eivor Min HaChai, not taking a limb from a living animal. And he gets eventually to Parshat Shmini. In Parshat Shmini, Nadav and Avihu are killed when they go into the Holies of Holies when they weren't called to go in. You all remember the story. According to one interpretation, why were they killed? Because they went in drunk. From here learns the Sefer HaChinuch, Mitzvah Kav Kuf Nun Bet, 152, Shelo Lihikanesh Shtuye Yayin Bamikdash, Vechen Shelo Yoreh Shtuy. You're not allowed to go into the Beit HaMikdash drunk, and you can't paskin a halacha when you're drunk. That's a very important halacha, especially for those that drink on Shabbos morning and during Kiddush. Rabbi, can I ask you a question? You've got to be very careful. If you're drunk, you can't paskin halacha. Your mental facilities are not working properly. And listen to what he says, sort of matter-of-factly. Sort of, by the way, you ready for this? And this prohibition not to paskin halacha when you're drunk is everywhere, every time. Bischarim, translate.
Men.
V'chein bi'isha chachama ru'ya lehorot. and in a very smart woman that knows halacha. Matter-of-factly. Say parachinam, say, women paskin halacha. Women can be halachic advisors. How do I know that? Because what I mentioned, that you can't be drunk, I mentioned both men and women. Naturally. So if you think the Sefer HaChinuch is alone, in the Code of Jewish Law, there's many interpretations. One of them is the Birke Yosef. The Birke Yosef's real name was not the lap of Yosef. His real name was the Chida. That also wasn't his real name. Rav Chaim Yosef David Azulai was a Sephardic leader, wrote about 35 books. One of them is this. And it's brought in the Pitchei Shuvah. The Afti Isha Psula Ladun, even though a woman cannot be a dayenet, cannot be a judge, Mikol Makom Isha Chachama Yechola Laharot Hora'ah, she can pasken halacha. A judge she cannot be because she can't be a witness. And Devorah wasn't a judge, but she pasken halacha. She gave halachic shiurim in the synagogue from our perspective. So view number one says a woman, just like Devorah, can pasken halacha, can learn, and ultimately give classes, and from that perspective, can function like a rabbi.
So it's like yoetzet halacha in Eretz.
Absolutely. A yoetzet halacha, or beyond yoetzet halacha, if you can go up to a woman and say, listen, my milchik spoon mixed my fleshik chulent, what's the halacha of the chulent, what's the halacha of the spoon? If she knows, she could pasken. You see it from classical sources. These are not 20th century sources over here. Second point of view, ladies. The Tosfos says, Devorah was a shofetet, nami, shema kiblu ota alehem mishum shechina. Maybe indeed a woman can be a judge if the Jewish people
think that she has
accept her. And in this case, they accepted her as the leader. So bring it into the 21st century. If you're in a synagogue and we want a woman rabbi and you accept the woman as the rabbi, no problem. Just like Devorah was accepted by the Jewish people way back then, we can do it way back now. Indeed, you can see that the issue that comes up in the rabbinic literature is indeed, well, how can that be? After all, it was mentioned before that a woman should not be in any position of srara, namely leadership, according to the Rambam. Well, first of all, the Rambam is alone on this, because most poskim say it's only with regard to a king of Israel. The Gemara says, the Torah says, Som tasim alecha melech, put upon you a king. And the Gemara says, melech velo malka, a king and not a queen. Comes along the Rambam and says, and so too for any leadership position. It's actually a minority view, yeah. And indeed, the Igrot Moshe of Moshe Feinstein has the following question. I won't read it inside, but I'll tell you what the question was. A poor man who was a mashkiach, who had a kashrus agency, died, and his daughter wants to take over. And all the rabbis said, no, a daughter can't take over for kashrus. She can't decide what's kosher and what's not. She claimed, but I know the business. I know the business. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, there's absolutely no reason why she cannot take over the kashrus business. Why? First of all, the Rambam is alone. Melech velo malka, so she can get a leadership position. Second of all, she knows what she's talking about. And thirdly, the community accepts her. The community accepted her father, now accepts her, and therefore, it's not a problem. So basically, according to this, a woman can do whatever she would like. She can be a clergy, she can be a rabbi, she can be a rebbetzin, she can be half a rabbi, a rebbetzin, because it's all dependent not on her, but on who? On the acceptance of the community. So ultimately, that's the second point of view. The first point of view is a woman cannot be a dayanet, cannot be a judge, but she can be a halachic advisor or a halachic decider. And the second point of view is it's up to the Jewish people. If they want to accept it, that's fine. Okay? So according to this, just to give a ramification, if a woman learned all the laws of being a judge, according to the first point of view, we're going to have to tell her it's wonderful you learned. You can even tell the judges what to do. But you can't be a judge. And the second point of view is, let's ask the litigants. Let's ask the Jewish people. If they accept you as a judge, bevakasha. The third point of view on the left side of the page is, inami nihi debeni nodin havi isha bichlal mikom makom b'dayanim en isha bichlal b'dvarai tadana al pi adibur. According to the third point of view of Tosfot, it was God who came along and said, Dvorah, you're going to be the judge. But if God doesn't come down and say, you can be a woman rabbi, you can't be. And indeed, you see many, 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 many sources here that support that point of view, that ultimately a woman cannot be a Jewish leader. However, if God came down and told us yes, it would be yes, but he doesn't come down and tell us yes, so therefore the answer would be no. Now, just to finish up that point of view, I should say the following. The same Rav Moshe Feinstein, who said a woman can be the head of a kashrus agency, was asked the following question. Shut Igrot Moshe, second to last source on the left side of the page. Imutar la'aniach li'isha la'hagit shi'ur bebeit ha'kneset o bebeit midrash shelo b'sha'at ha'tfilah. Kegon she'lel Shabbat nahug she'be'eza balabayit noten shi'ur bebeit ha'midrash b'parshat shavua u'ba'im lishmoa anashim b'nashim imutaret isha li'ten ha'ishi'ur. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked, can a woman be someone that gives a class on a Friday night to both men and women? So I understand that starting next week there's going to be a class in the rabbi's house on Friday night, on Navi. So, can a woman deliver it? And says Rav Moshe Feinstein, he thinks it's okay, if it's ba'akrai bilvat. Anyone know what that means?
Yeah.
Akrai means sometimes, once in a long while, but not every week. Two. V'tzarich la'azirah she'teshev bedafka be'ech emirat eshiur. She shouldn't stand up, she should sit down. It's more modest. And number three, don't do it in the shul, do it in a private home. Now I have to say this is not a halachic point of view. If a woman's allowed to give a class, then she can give a class either once a month or twice a month. Number two is standing, sitting, it's really up to the modesty level of the community. And number three, it should be in a private home versus a shul, that's already politics. But you should know, the same Rav Moshe Feinstein who said you could be the head of a kashrus organization was not comfortable with a woman giving a class. The one who's really not comfortable with a woman being a rabbi or giving a class or doing any public position is Rav Herschel Schechter. Rav Herschel Schechter, who was the Rosh Yeshiva, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in YU, a very important Rav and Posek in America, and I have to admit, one of the most special individuals I know, the man doesn't have an ounce of gaiva to him. The man is modest beyond modest. The man refuses to sit on business class, even though he was invited to many a times by the people supporting him to come in, because he said it's a waste of public funds. The man is modest beyond modest. If you call him up right now on his phone, he will return your call. Hi, this is Herschel Schechter. What can I do for you? The man knows the whole Torah. He doesn't have a memory. It's all in front of him at every moment. On this issue, he has a very interesting point of view. I brought it to you in English. And he basically said a woman cannot be a rabbi. Devorah was a directive from God. And this is his point of view. He says as follows. Look, we were all born with a tzelem Elokim. What does that mean? A divine image. We all have a little bit of God in us. Okay? Both men and women. There's no difference. Now, what does God do? Says the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, God's a kel mistater. God hides, and therefore we don't see God. Thus, he even hides very well, because there's many atheists out there don't think he exists. So he does a good job hiding, right? Says Rav Herschel Schechter, a woman has a perfect tzelem Elokim. Why? She doesn't do anything public. She's home. She doesn't stand in front of the synagogue and daven. She doesn't stand in front of the synagogue and lain. She doesn't stand in front of the synagogue and give a speech. Perfect divine image. But us men, God forbid, what can you do? Aftzalachis, we have a problem. We have to go to Minyan. We have to publicly speak at times. So we have tarnished, hurt, corroded our Tzelem Elokim. But women who never have a public role and never do anything public, they are perfect in their Tzelem Elokim and their divine image. I have to admit, I don't begin to understand what he says. According to what he's saying, when I went to shul this morning, I should feel bad. According to what he's saying, if I'm chazan, I should feel worse. And you should know that he does believe in what he said. Because in this reference, I heard in these 2 years the following joke. He said in Europe, there was once a horse, and the horse was stuck in the mud. And everyone was trying to pull it, and no one can get it out. So they went to the Hasidic Rebbe and they asked him what to do. So the Hasidic Rebbe said, take the shtender of the chazan, put it in front of the horse, and the horse is going to come out. So they had nothing better to do. They take the shtender, they put it in front of the horse, and lo and behold, the horse comes out. So they asked the Hasidic Rebbe, how did you know how horses work? He said, what do you mean? In my shul, every horse wants to be a chazan.
Oh my God.
So he really believes in what he says. He says, I was saying Kaddish for my father. The custom is that when you say Kaddish, you're chazan. I didn't run up to be chazan. I'm not a horse. I want a perfect Tzelem Elokim. So I go to the back of the shul and I keep quiet. They ask me to speak. I speak. But it's terrible to speak publicly. And if they ask me to be chazan, even worse, and make a minion, oh my gosh. Therefore, it's very hard for me to understand what he says, but he does say it. So just to sum up, there's three points of view. Can a woman be a woman rabbi? The first point of view is, yes, she can teach halacha, but she cannot be a judge. As to where rabbi fits in between teaching halacha versus judge, you'll decide. The second point of view is, if the Jewish people accept it, she can do anything she wants. And the third point of view is, absolutely not, unless God comes down and says yes. Questions? Yes.
About Shepherd's point sounds a little bit like all babies are born pure until they grow up. Babies should not grow up. It's like being trained into a dark corner.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Yes.
He was also a student of the Rav. I think the Rav had a more expansive idea of Svara than Rav Moshe supposedly.
I don't know to this day what the Rav's point of view was on the Srara issue, on can a woman get a leadership role? Did he paskin like the Rambam? There's alleged stories both ways. The story about Golda Meir is as follows. In the class, they asked him, when Golda Meir became prime minister, can she become the prime minister? And Rav Soloveitchik's answer was, and when Ben-Gurion became the prime minister, you didn't have a question? He was a man, but an anti-religionist he also was. And his answer was, it's a good thing they didn't ask us. So, he said, it's a good thing you didn't ask us. So there was two points of view that came out of that line. It's a good thing you didn't ask us. One point of view was, the Rav says that your woman cannot be a prime minister. He paskins like the Rambam, Srara. A woman cannot get a leadership role. See? He says, it's a good thing they didn't ask us. And the other point of view was, what do you mean? He said, it's a good thing you didn't ask us. I'm in the middle of a class. The class is on, I don't know, Matzah on Pesach. You asked me a question out of left field. I gave you a cynical answer, which is another way of saying, keep your mouth shut. I'm not dealing with it now. In the future, I'll give a class on it. So as to what Rav Soloveitchik's point of view is, I'm still waiting to hear. I do know he was against women's prayer groups, which started at his time. That I know for sure. I don't know what he said about this issue. I do know that he said that a woman can be on a board, but she can't be the president of a shul, because he felt it was immodest for a woman to come into the men's section to say announcements. So they once even asked him, is that because of Srara, leadership position? He said, what do you mean, Srara? You know, he said it this way. You know a president that has any leadership? You know a president that can decide anything? It's avdus, it's slavery to be a president of a shul. That wasn't the reason he had. He felt it was immodest. Fine. But as to the rabbi issue, I don't know. I'm really pleading ignorance. I've heard so many points of view. What did Rav Soloveitchik say? Don't know. Whoever does know and has proof, I'd love to see it. Okay. Moving on. Let's see how this tests out in reality. We said, a woman can teach halacha, but she can't be a rabbi or a dayanet. The second point of view is, a woman can never be in this position. It's only if God says so. And his third point of view is, it's up to the Jewish people. Now let's turn the page and take a test case. The test case I'd like to take is a very feminine mitzvah, lighting candles on Yom Tov, on Chag. This is the test case. Now, why is this the test case? Because on the bottom of the last page, I did bring the Shulchan Aruch that paskins that a woman cannot be a dayanet. A woman can't be a dayanet, she can't be a judge. Fine. Can she be a rabbi? Because a rabbi is not a judge. Can she paskin halacha? Let's take a test case. Everyone ready? What's the difference between Shabbos and Yontif? This is like the pop quiz. Ochel nefesh, you're allowed to cook on Yontif. What else? Transfer fire. You can transfer fire from an existing flame to another flame. So if you want to make a pot of noodles, you're allowed to cook. How do you light the fire? You transfer fire if you have a gas stove. Okay. Well, here we go. We come to Yontif. When do you light candles on Yontif? So let's go back. When do you light candles on Shabbos? Whatever it says, candle lighting time. Candle lighting time is going to be 18 minutes prior to sunset or beyond. Jerusalem, it's 40. Yeah, it's beautiful. Why is it 18 minutes before sunset? Because you can't light candles on Shabbos. Makes sense. You light before Shabbos. Comes along Yontif, you can light on Yontif. So do you light before Yontif, or do you wait till you come home from shul and you say hello to all your guests, be it in the sukkah, be it at your Pesach Seder, be it at the Shavuos Blintzes table, any of the above? When do you light candles? Before the onset of the holiday on the first day, or after? Because you could light after. So on Shabbos, it's a no-brainer, of course, before. Comes along the following. Let's skip the first and second source, which shows you that in the Tosefta, the halacha was paskened like a girl. And see, not so much in the Tosefta, which is a Tanaic literature, where they paskened the halacha like a woman. Let's see the following. Hagdamata Rav Yosef Kohen ben Hadrisha v'Haprisha Latur. The son of the Drisha and the Prisha writes about his mother. And he says, Ula atzor b'milin. I'm going to stop and say a few words. Remember how I started on Shabbos? Before I begin to talk, I like to say a few words. Yeah. It's an ancient custom. He's writing a whole preface to his interpretation on the Torah, a code of Jewish law. He says, I'd like to stop to say a few words. He just read 25 pages. Okay! I'd like to stop to say a few words. Mi yuchol mi lahalot ala sefer. Who can even begin to write about the wonderful woman, the Gvira, the Tznua, the Chasidah, the Yeshara, Imi Morati, my mother, my teacher, Harabanit, Marat Bela. My mother Bela. My mother Bela was an amazing woman, a mother, an amazing wife, no one like her. And amongst her attributes, says the son of the Drisha and the Prisha, Habitu na ra'u. How would you say that in English? Take a look. In Yiddish, Nemakuk. Let's take a look. Mashi hirgisha bita'ut. How she felt the mistake. She felt it. The men didn't feel it. Bita'ut anashim ba'adlakatan aneirot b'yom tov. Bita'utan b'shtayim. Two mistakes when women light candles on Yontif. Ha'achat. Number one, they light candles when Yontif already comes. Excuse me. Ma'ashenu agot la'adlik neirot shal yom tov k'mo shel Shabbat. Da'ayinu shemadlikin v'akacha misalkin yedehen. You all know that on Erev Shabbos, when you light candles, women have a thing that are taught to kids in grade school, not in grade school, earlier in primary. And that is that a woman lights the candles, covers her eyes, opens her eyes. Now, what is that all about? So you should... What's your name again?
Ora.
Ora says you should do a mitzvah in this following manner. The protocol is, make the bracha, do the mitzvah. So you make the bracha, you shake the lulav. You make the bracha, you blow the shofar. You make the bracha, you light the... Hanukkah candles. What happens on Shabbos? We Ashkenazim feel that when you light the candles, you have accepted Shabbos. So you have a catch-22. You made the bracha, you just accepted Shabbos, but you're supposed to light the candles, but you can't, you just accepted Shabbos. So what do? We light the candles first, and then we make the bracha.
Yeah.
So why do we cover our eyes? That's what we like to call a quasi-bracha then mitzvah. Why is it quasi? You already lit the candles.
Yes.
So what you do is you close your eyes. For a moment, you forgot that you light the candles. You open them up. Oh, here's the candles. Wow, that's pretty good. How'd they get here? I don't know how they got here. They're here. That's a quasi doing a mitzvah that way. So says Bela. Says Mrs. Bela. May she rest in peace. Mrs. Bela says, on Yontif, there's no reason to do that because you're allowed to light a fire. So the proper protocol should be on the eve of Yontif that you should first make the bracha and then light the candles. Good point. Never thought of that. Second mistake, she says. When do they light candles? Late into the night. People come home from shul, they schmooze, they talk about how hard it was to cook for Yontif this year. If it's a 3-day Yontif, they ultra kvetch. And after they kvetch and they yench and they get, you know what? Let's start the meal, I'll light candles. She says, no, it's wrong. You have to light candles in honor of the holiday. So you have to do it before the holiday comes in. Just like you dress up before the holiday comes in. And these are the two mistakes. One, you should make the bracha before and then light the candles on the eve of Yontif. And two, you should light it before Yontif. So, Bela said what she said. I'm sure she said it around the Yontif table. The son of the Drisha and the Prisha records it in his beautiful eulogy for his mother. And the question I have is, not so much what Bela says, I think it makes perfect sense. Do I listen to Bela? Do we listen to Bela? Does the Jewish world paskin like Bela, or do they say, hey, she's a woman. We don't listen to women on halachic issues. Anyone? Razi says we do. Well, guess what, Razi, you're not alone. Dagol Mervava. The Dagol Mervava, Rabbi Akiva Eger says, Ula aniyuta ati hadin imimo. No more, no less, in the Shulchan Aruch. The Dagol Mervava, Rabbi Akiva Eger says, I believe that the law is like his mother. Doesn't say the law is like what I read in the Drish and the Prisha. He could have hid behind that, you know? No, he said, like the woman, like Bela. The law is like Bela. B'yom tov tevarech v'achakach tachlik. They're right. Sharei tshuva, ayein, be'erei tev, v'dogo mevava, hiskim lahalacha, delo, kahamagen Avraham. The halacha is like Bela, not like the Magen Avraham wrote. In a minute, you're going to see what the Magen Avraham wrote. Please be nice. You're not going to like it. V'chein here, v'chein there, v'siyem ba'kanal lahorot ke'eshet ha'gaon drisha. The halacha is like the wife of the Drisha, no more and no less. Imagine today in the rabbinic journal, someone's asked a question or online, and you write, the halacha is like Mrs. Jacobowitz. The halacha is like Mrs. Cohn. Right in the Shulchan Aruch. No problem. The halacha is like the woman that spoke intellectually, halachically correct. But there's another point of view. What did I say earlier? The loka Magen Avraham. So the minute you say not like the Magen Avraham, where do I go? To the Magen Avraham. What did the Magen Avraham say? Be nice. Be yom tov tevarech v'achar kach tadlik. On yom tov, you should first make the bracha and then light the candles. Kain katav v'sof sefer hadrisha b'shem himo. This is what's written over there in the name of his mother Bela. Says the Magen Avraham, no dice. Why? Aval ein chokhma laisha. Woman doesn't know anything. A woman doesn't have any knowledge. So we don't do that. We basically, like Shabbos, we light the candles, then we make the bracha. A woman doesn't know anything. The Sharei Tshuva also brings the Be'er Eitav in the name of the Tshuva Space Yaakov that says that the bottom line is that a woman should not be learning Torah and should not be giving out halachic points of view. But if you look on the right side versus the left side of the page, you could see that the overwhelming majority of poskim had no problem whatsoever, not with a woman poskining halacha, and not with quoting a woman who's right on halachic issues. From the Tosefta, namely a Tanaic source, all the way through the 18th century, if a woman was right, they quoted her, and in her name, not a pseudonym. Not like in certain newspapers today where they say that there's a man and Mrs. X. They don't mention the first name of a woman, beyond me, and they don't show pictures of women as well. Right here, the halacha's like X. You know what's happening today, right? I didn't just say something that no one knows. In the so-called, I won't say which newspapers, they don't mention the first name of women. It's not Sneus. They say Mrs. Livni. Mrs. Mayer was the Prime Minister of Israel. So I wondered why. So I asked the editor of the paper, who was once on a plane with me, why? He said, it's not Sneus. It's not Sneus. Okay. I opened up my Chumash. Voracious. Says Adam. And then Adam couldn't be alone. How can a man be alone? Chava. Said, should we skip out Voracious this year? Went on to Parshat Lech Lecha. There's Avraham. Sarah, this Parsha's told us. There's Yitzchak, Rivka. A lot of women's names here, no? So I said, what do you do in your community? You skip over these Parshas? Like that those Shabbos you don't celebrate? I mean, Chas V'Shalom, you celebrate Shabbos. Joe Lane? I'm waiting for an answer. Make a long story short, in the Shulchan Aruch, they mention the name. They say she's right halachically. She's right halachically. We paskin like her. So ultimately, if you end this particular lecture, I would like to say the following. I believe that today there's a consensus that women can learn Torah. I showed you today that there's even sort of a consensus that a woman can paskin halacha. The debate comes down to, can a woman be in a leadership role? And we saw three points of view. One is she can paskin halacha and do many of the rabbinic duties, albeit not being a judge. The second point of view is she can never do anything, it's only because God said so. And the third point of view is it depends on the acceptance of the Jewish people. So ultimately we come down to the following issue. As we look to 2018, I believe that this issue will be decided first and foremost, not by the rabbis, but by the communities. Will they accept women as their rabbis and spiritual leaders? Because if they don't, we don't get to base one. We don't get to anywhere because that's the leniency that the Jewish people accept it. If they do accept it, then we have to ask, is it permissible? I believe it's totally permissible and even obligatory in a way, but I can't say obligatory because God didn't obligate them. But I believe it's permissible and encouraged that women learn Torah. Women should write halachic articles. They should be part of the halachic debate. And ultimately, men and women should debate about halachic issues. We're about to go into a society and a scenarios that we've never dealt with before. If you live in a smart house, can you live there on Shabbos? That's a question that was never dealt with before in the history of the Jewish people. I'd like to see learned men and learned women at the table, and engineers, and electrical engineers for that matter, debate these issues. So I believe that women should learn Torah, and should be part of the halachic debate. The question of women rabbis is going to be decided, in my humble opinion, by the Jewish people. If the Jewish people accept it or not, then we saw the points of view on every side. And I just wanted to end with the following source. We started with the vote for women, and we'll end with the following source. Bottom of the page, the same Rav Uziel. השתתפות האישה בבחירות למוסדות הציבור, תשובה זו כתבתי בשעתה לשם בירור הלכה לעצמי, ולא לפרסמה להראות בשאלה זו הלכה למעשה. He originally wrote a long response about the issue of the woman's vote, but he didn't publicize it. אולם עתה, but now, אחרי ששאלה זו נפטרה מעליה, because women are voting, I thought I'd write it. I believe that he's saying something very important. And that is the following. When the moods are very high, when there's a lot of rage on the issue of the woman's place in the Orthodox community, to come out with an objective article, an objective statement, is very difficult. I believe it's evolving right now. It's evolving as we speak. And therefore, I call this lecture Opportunities, because I believe there are opportunities, Evolutions, and Revolutions. And right now, in the year 2017, if you want to bring your point of view, it's not going to be taken objectively. It's going to be taken subjectively. People will say, you're part of the Open Orthodox camp. You're part of the Riskin people. It's not going to be taken objectively. In order to get an objective point of view, it's going to be difficult. And number two, and this is important as well, you see there's a very large variation of opinions. Because there is, we have to respect the other opinions and not write them off as heretics and as other names. There are other opinions. It might not be your cup of tea, but to say it's illegitimate, I can't say that. So allow me to end with the following story from my own town in Efrat. We don't have a partnership minyan in Efrat, but we have a minyan where women are very, very, very involved. So what happens in a bar bat mitzvah is that they daven together shachris led by a man. And then they split off. There's a women's laning with the bat mitzvah girl in one room, and a men's laning in another room. And then they come back together, and the woman gives a drasha, the bat mitzvah girl gives a drasha. When my daughter became bat mitzvah 2 years ago, I asked her, what would you like to do for her bat mitzvah? See, for a boy, it's pretty much set out, you know? Yeah. You know, you got the laning, the haftorah, musaf, you know, option, drasha. It's set out. I'm not happy it's set out. Many boys are scared to lane. Many boys, this is not their cup of tea. But let's just, for the sake of the argument, say it's set out. Girls have many opportunities. They can do this, they can do that. Mm-hmm. I asked my daughter what she would like to do, and it was a six-month fight between me and her. Now, during the fight, when she was screaming and I was yelling, she said, what do you want me to do? Go to that shul called Zemer HaZayit? I said, listen, if that's your choice, that's fine. It's part of the halachic system. It's within the realm. I don't have a problem. If you wanted to go to a conservative synagogue, I'd say, Atkan, no. Men and women sit together. I'm not willing to do that. That's a halacha. But here there's a mechitza. There's a private room for women to lane. I wouldn't even be able to be in there, but if that's what you choose to do, I would respect it. Why? Because it's part of Orthodoxy. So that, of course, made the fight go down. She was expecting me to say no, and she would say yes, but I said maybe, so I threw her off guard. She didn't eventually do that. She did something else. But the bottom line is, I believe that women do have opportunities that men don't have, because ultimately they're not shackled down to a specific bat mitzvah ceremony. They're also not shackled down to many things. They have opportunities. They can choose to learn Torah or choose not to. They can choose to sleep in the sukkah, and they can choose not to. And they can choose to become halachic spiritual leaders, and they can choose not to. Number two is, if they do, then it's up to the communities to decide if they'll accept it. Kiblu alayu, as Tosfos said, do they accept it, or don't they? And number three, I'd be very careful to voice your opinion on this issue at this point, even though I'm doing that right now, because there are moods out there that are very high. Unfortunately, feelings on this issue are very, very high, and I would be very careful to voice your opinion. To voice your opinion, unless it's in a room like this, where we all respect each other, and ultimately we can voice it. But out there, people right away will label you and say, oh, you're here, you're there, you're what? A halachic debate should be done properly. So once again, I'm just going to end by saying, I believe women should be encouraged to learn and should be part of the halachic debate, and I have no problem sitting and arguing with the woman on halacha, be it the smart house that's about to come in, be it the electric car, can we use it on Shabbos on a Shabbos clock, be it many things that are about to happen. You're all laughing. I'm not laughing. This is happening.
No, the car
is going to happen. But ladies, I really believe that I'd like to see women at the table, not just for the question of how high the mechitza should be and what color. I'd like to see them on all halachic debates. I believe we're there already. But ultimately, when they're there, they have to be taken for what they are. Namely, you give a halachic opinion, you give sources, just like a man can. And once you do, that's fine. The question of women leaders in synagogues that you could see is debatable. But I would not write off any synagogue that has a mechitza and has a woman rabbi within the limitations of Jewish law. You're an amazing crowd. This lecture has been going on for more than an hour. Nobody moved. I am amazed by the fact that you can sit through a lecture. I thank you very much for listening, and I'm happy to take questions. Sure, sure, sure. I'm here. Right. Anything that necessitates a minyan. Okay. Okay. I want to make a division between the two. With regard to Megillah reading, okay? I never understood how come rabbis are against the private Megillah reading for women. For two reasons. Number one, women are obligated in reading and hearing the Megillah. Yes, there is a Bahag that says women are obligated in hearing the Megillah, not reading it. But if everyone's a woman in the room, they're all equally obligated. So, therefore, I never understood the opposition to the Megillah reading, because they're obligated in the mitzvah. What if the sages said they're obligated, but we're going to take away that obligation? And number two, and this is my main point, I once read a Megillah for women. Let's take a room like this. Everyone was a woman, 100 women, and I'm the man. Hi! I'm going to read the Megillah for you. I felt it was the most immodest thing I did in my life. I don't understand. There's women there. Some of them scholars, many of them can lay in the Megillah. They have beautiful voices. A man's not allowed to listen to a woman singing, but a woman can listen to a woman singing. Why should I be there laying the Megillah? That's the height of immodesty. If you want to be modest, get the men out of there and let the women read the Megillah. So the Megillah reading thing, I, for the life of me, don't understand the opposition for. I tried, believe me, I looked, I did. The only issue I could find was they want the whole community together for Megillah reading. That's the only legitimate opposition I found. Let's everyone come together for the Megillah reading. So, if indeed there's one Megillah reading in the community, and it's at night, let's say, fine. During the day, let me ask you a question. You get up Purim morning. You eat your humintashin, or you don't eat your humintashin. A man goes to work, or you go to work, you're going to hear the Megillah at 6, she's going at 6:30, the kids are going at 8 o'clock because they're off from school. Who hears the Megillah together during the day? So to say, oh, we're all together, we can't have a woman's Megillah reading, that's a joke. More than that, at least where I live on the night of Purim, there's the Megillah reading on time, then there's a second Megillah reading, and there's the Megillah reading on the hour, Chabad takes care of that one. Right. Right? On the hour, like the bus, every hour, boom, 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 Megillah reading. What are you talking about? That's unity of the community. It's never unity. Everyone's hearing the Megillah at a different time, especially if you have small children in the house. So therefore, I never understood that. It's a woman's mitzvah, just like a man's mitzvah. They're obligated in it. Maybe a man and a woman are different, but they're obligated in hearing the Megillah. And number two, it's more modest that a woman reads for a woman. I never understood the opposition to that. I still don't. That's beyond my comprehension. You have to get someone here that will explain that. Regarding the women's prayer group, here I do understand that you're running a very tight rope. You're not saying Kaddish, Kedusha, Baruch, or anything that necessitates a minyan. There's no halachic problem. After all, you go to any day school, that's a Hebrew academy. Don't the women daven together? The girls daven together. The men daven together. That's the way it is. So I don't see any problem with that per se. The problem begins with the laning. So if there is laning, that's a little bit of a problem. Is it brachot levatala, meaning brachot in vain, or not? But if you ask me what the future is, and this is my opinion, I authored a book on davening. Davening is very close to my heart. If you ask me what are one of the things that have to be changed in davening for the future, I really foresee. I foresee it. There's going to be a shul. There's going to be two rooms. One will be men davening in a minyan. The other will be women davening in a women's prayer group, under the limitations you said, and we'll come together for Kiddush. I believe women will get the higher spiritual levels if men are not looking at them, and vice versa, even with the mechitza. And I personally think that's the wave of the future. I'd love to see it. Of course, you need the physical space, and you need to have, of course, the motivation to do it, because that's really changing what we are used to, at least. But I have to be honest, on Shabbos morning, I daven in one minyan. My daughter goes to a different minyan if she goes to shul, and my son goes to a third minyan. We don't daven together in the same minyan. So I don't understand the family that davens together, stays together anymore, because I don't think it's happening anymore.
Okay, I'm really sorry. The rabbi...
Take your time.
Yeah? It's okay?
I'm not going to interrupt Torah study.
Okay, fine. No, is no, there any questions?
We had another question, I believe. Someone raised their hand. Yes?
I just had a thought. At the end of your talk, you made the proclamation that these decisions will be made by the Jewish people. Yeah. And I asked myself the question, notice I'm not asking you, who are the Jewish people?
I believe the Orthodox Jewish communities, if they would like and they feel the need to have female clergy on their staff, the decision will be made. Just like when the Jewish community felt naturally that we want women to be engaged in study in general, and Torah study in particular, it happened. From women being at home and sewing and doing housework to women going to school, getting high degrees as well as high Torah learning, it happened. It didn't happen because the rabbi said so. It happened because the Jewish people were the ones that pushed for it. Within halacha, again, we're not talking about the Jewish people pushing to eat pig. They can push all they want to eat pig. It's not going to happen. Not under my watch. It's not going to happen that, or we're pushing to eat on Yom Kippur. We're going to daven better. That's not going to happen. Within halacha, within the sources, we're pushing for something. Ultimately, I believe it's going to happen. I'll give you the proof. Beis Yaakov. Have you heard of the school? Founded by Sarah Schneerer. Everyone was taught. I was taught as a kid. Sarah Schneerer didn't move 1 ounce. She didn't even walk 2 steps before going first to the Gerer Rebbe and secondly to the Chafetz Chaim. And when they agreed, she opened the first women's school for Torah learning. That is the biggest fiction out there. She founded the school in Krakow, the school was functioning, and then they wanted to raise money for the school. So Sarah Schneerer, being a good fundraiser beyond an amazing educator, decided if she's affiliated with Agudas Yisrael, she'll get more funds. Agudas Yisrael said, good idea. But in order for us to fundraise, we need 2 great rabbis to sort of be behind us. So if you go to someone's house and you say, hi, I'm collecting for Beis Yaakov, they give you $2. But I'm collecting for Beis Yaakov and the Chafetz Chaim and the Gerer Rebbe are behind me. Ah, $18, $24, $2,400 it happened. Sarah Schneer started the school because she felt the need. She couldn't believe women didn't know the basic story of Hanukkah. Then rabbis either signed on, signed off, etc. Now, she took a legitimate point of view in halacha that says women can learn Torah. It's not clear that women can learn Torah. That's a whole other lecture. But ultimately, it wasn't that first she went to the rabbis and then she did. No, first she did and then the rabbi signed on and signed off, just like what's happening today. Now again, if you start the movement for eating on Yom Kippur, there's not going to be one rabbi that's going to sign on. Whoever is not a rabbi. I can say that very openly. However, if you start the movement for women learning Torah, you could see there's legitimate sources, and indeed, people will either sign on or sign off. If you start the movement for women to be part of the halachic debate, or there should be a vada rabbanim of the city together with women that are learned, it might happen. That's what I meant by the Jewish people. So who is the Jewish people? The healthy intuition of the Orthodox communities. Yes?
I expect Bruria to be here in the sources.
Yeah. Bruria is in the sources. If you look on page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you'll see Bruria is in the Tosefta, and they paskin the halacha like Bruria. Sylvia. Kitniot on Pesach. What was the first example?
One day a Yantiv.
Okay. You're talking about one day a Yantiv, which is a rabbinic enactment. Kitniot is a custom. So I'm going to put them in two different realms because rabbinic enactment is higher than a custom. Kitniot, I believe that if the Jewish people do sign on, we may get to that. I say we may, I don't know. We're not there yet. We're far from it, by the way. With regard to second day Yontif today, it's a rabbinic enactment. I don't see any way to abolish it. The rabbi said we know when the date is. We know when Sukkot is going to come out 20 years from now. Yeah. But keep 2 days outside of Israel because of various concerns. So I don't see that changing in the next few years. Now, you should know there's a Chatam Sofer that says that in the future when Mashiach comes, they're going to celebrate 2 days in Israel. No Israeli wants to ever hear that Chatam Sofer. I once quoted it in a class when I talked about does an Israeli have to keep 2 days or 1 day outside of Israel, and I quoted this Chatam Sofer sort of as a commercial break. They almost threw me out head first for desecration of airspace. All the Americans and the Canadians in the room said, we only made Aliyah for one Seder. What are you doing? We sold our house. We got this, that, that. Only you're going to tell me we're going towards two? But having said that, it's a rabbinic enactment. I don't see it being abolished until the times of Mashiach when we have a Sanhedrin and they can abolish rabbinic enactments. Kitniot is a very, very late custom. It's on a lower level. That may be abolished. Yes?
You're talking about Esther Schneer. She lived in my mother's building.
Sarah, yeah.
Sarah Schneer. My mother used to say that when the rabbis used to come to her door, she would be nervous and afraid to open her door. But the other thing that I wanted to say is that things have evolved and women's role in Judaism, but the one thing that we're still stuck on is aguna.
Yeah.
Okay.
Aguna.
We're not stuck on aguna, we.
The men are.
I'll tell you about aguna. Okay. I refer everyone here to the lecture I gave the last time I was here about taking off the veil with dignity. I believe that is the beautiful, beautiful subject that your husband gave to the lecture. My wife is a divorce lawyer, an Israel family lawyer. I deal with it almost daily, not so much directly, but when my wife comes home and kvetches, I have to listen. That's in the ketubah. You must listen to your wife when she kvetches about work. God said in the Torah that when a man and a woman are not getting along, and they've tried everything, therapy, etc., he gives her a get, and she goes on with her life. So Judaism in this case is perfect, but the Jews are not. The Jews act like terrorists when they divorce their wives. And there's no excuse for that. I find no excuse for it. And I personally believe that it's not that we have not solved the problem. God put into the Torah that a man has to give a woman a get, but they don't get along. Anyone that fears God, anyone that has the Yirat Shamayim to fast on Yom Kippur and not to eat even kitniot on Pesach, when the time comes, should give a get. No strings attached, just like he shakes a lulav on Sukkot, because that's what God says. And he puts on tefillin every morning except for Shabbos and Yontif, because that's what God said. So too, he should give a get. And if he plays around and abuses halacha, we will have to do everything to make him change his mind. And I say that nicely. Now, in Israel, the problem is almost solved, quote unquote, in the sense of that the government and the Beis Din has a lot of power. Outside of Israel, there's many different solutions from the prenuptial agreements and whatnot. But the halacha is the halacha, and I work within the halacha. I can't change eating on Yom Kippur. I can't change not eating pig. And I can't change that a man has to give a get to a wife. Now, Rabbeinu Gershom in the 9th century added that the woman has to acquiesce to receive the get. So there are agunim out there as well as agunot. But the bottom line is, that's not going to change. That's a biblical law. That's a divine law. We as a community have to change, and not, God forbid, give any sort of comfort, let alone let a person who refuses to give his wife a get, to feel comfortable in our communities. And quite frankly, if we do, we're acting like terrorists. We're harboring terrorists. A woman is waiting to go on with her life. The marriage is over. Therapy was tried and failed. It's time to get divorced. Halacha requires you to give a get. Halacha requires me to make a bracha before I eat. Halacha requires me to daven shachris mincha ma'ariv. In that situation, halacha requires me to give a get. And to hold out for money? And to abuse the halacha? It is absolutely inexcusable. Now, I have to say that right now, as I'm speaking to you, there is a get refuser in my city in Efrat. He is such a get refuser that the Beis Din in Jerusalem, no modern Orthodox rabbis over there, said that you can't make him be part of a minyan. You cannot talk to him. You cannot let him be part of your Shabbos meals. Stay away from him. Beis Din in Jerusalem. This is not the liberal Rabbi Riskin of Efrat talking here. Obviously, he signed on. But quite frankly, this is inexcusable. A man is with a kippah on his head, is refusing to do what God said to do. We can't excuse that. That is abuse of halacha. And abuse is abuse. It's not just abuse of the wife and abuse of the children. It's abuse of halacha as well. And that kind of person should not be allowed into a synagogue and should not be allowed into a minyan. He should give a get as properly. And I have to be honest with you. I know everything that goes into a divorce. I'm married to a divorce lawyer. I know everything around it. But the get should be separate from all the rest of the agreements. The get is what God obligated to you to do when the marriage is over. As to how do you divide up the assets and whatnot, that should be a separate debate, and you can fight and fight and fight all you want with dignity.
Okay,
thank you all very much.